Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Support for Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom is brought to you, as always, by Manscaped for all your male grooming needs. We want to say thank you to our listeners who continue to support the podcast by shopping online at manscaped.com and getting 20% off your entire order with the promo code SUNNYNKC. You guys have helped us fund this podcast and keep bringing you guys Chiefs content every week, so we appreciate that. You already know about the Lawnmower 3.0, the best hygiene tool for the modern man with patented skin-safe technology that makes getting nicked a thing of the past. But they also have a nice nail kit called the Shears 2.0, which has tempered stainless steel tools, including slash tip tweezers, round point scissors, fingernail clippers, and a medium grit nail file. I'm a personal believer in these products, and if you're frustrated with your electric razors running out of batteries, becoming dull, catching your skin, you owe it to yourself to try out Manscaped. Just remember to use promo code SUNNYNKC to get 20% off your entire order. Manscaped, take your grooming game to the next level. Now back to your regularly scheduled programming.
We've got the anniversary today, in fact, I think it is, of the greatest Alex Smith interview probably of all time. And by greatest, what I mean is this interview just really captures the essence of who Alex Smith was as a person and as a quarterback in a single soundbite. So Taylor, what am I talking about? When I just told that to you, what comes to mind?
I already know. It is the most Alex Smith interview. You're absolutely right. It is Thanksgiving week, and he was on 610 Sports Radio for his weekly chat with the quarterback that they do, and they just tried to liven it up a little bit, give him an easy softball question, and say, what is your favorite Thanksgiving side or Thanksgiving dish? What's your favorite thing to eat at Thanksgiving? And this white bread cookie cutter – no imagination guy says, well, obviously turkey stands out. And it's just you and I, the moment we heard this, we laughed about this for weeks. I mean, he is just the most answering turkey on Thanksgiving meal. That is as Alex Smith as the world gets.
What, besides turkey, what stands out to you, Taylor? What's your Thanksgiving go-to?
Well, gravy stands out. Yeah. Sure. Like, come on, Alex. Like, at least mashed potatoes and gravy. I mean,
mashed potatoes.
That's basically it. I could eat that with every meal, but yeah.
That's alas, we can't, because that's that would be very unhealthy.
Anything with corn, anything with cheese, anything with starch of any kind, I'm all about. Any like broccoli and cheese casserole or something, or I mean, that's all. Give me all that stuff. I'm so excited.
Well, it's going to be a very happy Thanksgiving indeed, because the Chiefs are 9-1. Welcome in, everybody, to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. It is Thanksgiving week. I don't know. I guess.
Yeah, I kind of started to caw and ended with a gobble. So
sure. Well, you know, I think more the gobble is what we wanted to go for. It's week 10 in the NFL. We finished 10 weeks in the books, or I guess technically 11 weeks in the books. Yeah. We're rolling into week 12. It is the week of Thanksgiving. We're recording this on a Tuesday. So first off, happy Thanksgiving to all of you, our listeners. We are thankful for you. We're not going to do a segment about what we're thankful for. That's too cliche, but we are thankful for all of our listeners.
We got turkeys of war.
That's right. Our turkeys of war, our birds of war, gobble, gobble, gobble. You guys did a great job last week with our Raiders episode. So thank you for checking out. We got great numbers on that. So we appreciate you guys tuning in and putting up with Raider Cody. And this week, we obviously get to, we get a dunk a little bit. We get a strut a little bit because the Chiefs did beat the Raiders. So we're going to talk about that, of course. We're going to answer a couple of mailbag questions. We're going to talk about the playoff picture, and we're going to end this with our preview of Chiefs at the Buccaneers. First, Taylor, let's thank our sponsors. I'll let you do that. Thank our sponsors, Taylor.
Yeah, thanks to Sports Illustrated first. They, you know, kind of are our parent company, and they sponsor us here. You can find us at si.com/NFL/Chiefs. And you can also find them on Twitter at SI Chiefs. And of course, if it's beginning of the show, so you just heard the Manscaped read, we love our sponsors at Manscaped. They've been great to us. And, you know, go to manscaped.com. Make sure you do that promo code, SunnyNKC. Get yourself 20% off. They've got great products. We love them.
Let's talk about the Raiders, Taylor.
Okay.
Let's talk about the Raiders. So, gladly. Sunday night football, Chiefs traveled to Las Vegas to play for the first time in, I don't even know the real, is it Allegiant Stadium? They call it the Death Star. That's what they've been calling it. It actually looks like a Roomba, but that's fine. That's neither here nor there. The Chiefs traveled to Las Vegas to take on the Raiders. Obviously, as you all heard in our preview last week, I mean, we were pretty upfront about it. I think all of Chiefs Kingdom was on the same page, pretty salty about how things turned out the last time the Chiefs played the Raiders, and definitely looking for some revenge in the desert, going to the Death Star. And boy, this game did not turn out how I wanted it. I mean, the result was good. Go ahead.
If you just describe right now how you feel about the game without talking about the result, is it the same way that I'm feeling, which is that it feels like the Chiefs got their asses kicked? Is that?
Yeah. And I was very pissed off about this game, and the overall experience of watching the game was a net negative for me.
Yes.
Despite the last 30 seconds or so of real time, the football game's 3 hours long. And for 2 hours, 59 minutes and 30 seconds of it, I was extremely pissed off. That was the feeling that stuck with me throughout the week. And now here we are on Tuesday recording this show. And that feeling has subsided a little bit because I've gotten to spend some time taking victory laps. I took a victory lap first around my living room in honor of the glorious bus driver.
Nice.
That irked John Gruden. My dog and I took a victory lap around the living room. And then I took several victory laps on Twitter with some Raiders fans that I had been kind of interacting with. And I know a lot of you reached out to our friend, a friend of the pod, Raider Cody, and let him know what you felt about the game. But at the time, I felt bad about the game, and I still do feel bad about the game. Yeah.
I will read a text message that you sent me at 9:38 p.m. where you said, "Let's just not do a show this week." And I said, "Or ever again." Agreed. It was dark. They were going blow for blow with a team that we thought they should have blown out of the stadium. I mean, this was going into this game between the Raiders defense not practicing due to COVID and the victory lap stuff and the one loss on the schedule and already being Raiders week where Chiefs should have plenty of motivation.
And the Chiefs coming off a bye.
Chiefs coming off a bye. There was so much that went into a formula here. I mean, AFC West game in general, those are usually Chiefs usually do a pretty good job there. And I don't know if maybe it was just a confluence of so much drama that it kind of balanced stuff out. Whatever happened here, the Raiders offense did anything they wanted all game long. Derek Carr was doing very un-Derek Carr stuff to the Chiefs, but now two games in a row, it seems like maybe that is what Derek Carr does to the Chiefs now. It's very topsy-turvy. I'm not here for it. I'm very uncomfortable with the Raiders being able to play with the Chiefs. I would like to go back to those 28-10 easy idiot Derek Carr throwing three picks a game. Let's go back to that. I like that a lot better.
Yeah, before we get into the positives from this game, because obviously there was a big positive at the end, there were positives. The offense was obviously a huge positive, and the fact that we won the game and, you know, essentially with it, the AFC West, again, is all very positive. But let's get the negative energy out first. So beginning with the Chiefs defense and the Raiders offense, and I want to just, like, let's just close our eyes for a second. And imagine, Taylor, that it is week 17, 2018, and Derek Carr drops back and he throws the ball to Darren Waller, who is not even looking
Who's
at him.
Who's Jared Cook, but yes.
Jared Cook, yeah, right. And Dan Sorensen takes that and runs it back into the end zone for pick six. That's the Derek Carr. Let's just take a minute, just ruminate on that, go back to that time. Derek Carr is good at the game now. We kind of talked about this with Cody last week, but this is Derek Carr's best season in the NFL by far. I don't talk to me about 2016. He wasn't that good in 2016. He is actually, by a lot of metrics, a top five quarterback. Like, it's almost harder to make the case that he's not a top five quarterback. Now, listen, that still doesn't really make him a realistic MVP candidate, because the gap between number five and number two and number one is huge. Massive. It's still big. Mahomes and Rodgers, even, you know, if you wanted to throw somebody like Kyler, you know, into the mix there. But he's playing really well, and he played really well in this game. He was very, very sharp. I mean, honestly, the only other times the Raiders stopped themselves, I say stopped themselves because that's what happened. The only other times the Raiders really got stopped in this game were when his receivers dropped the ball. And he was very precise. He was very on point. What was frustrating about this game was, as in the first meeting, the Chiefs really did not pressure Derek Carr hardly at all. And the handful of times the Chiefs got pressure in this game, he did Derek Carr things. It was like, you know, when you don't give this guy 5 seconds to stand in the pocket and do whatever he wants to do, he's still going to make mistakes. The long pass, I think it was in the third quarter, that he didn't connect on, with Aguilar, I think it was, that ball was catchable, but it was a little bit off target, and it was off target because they pressured him. And then on the last play of the game, essentially before the Chiefs kneeled down, when he threw an interception, same deal. He got flushed from the pocket. He had to throw on the run. He was under pressure, and he threw it directly to Dan Sorensen, who made a great play on the ball. I mean, the Chiefs have got to find a way to get some pressure, Taylor.
Yeah, that was the name for sure. Clark and Jones were the two names that everybody was kind of dogging at the end of the game, because you have all that money invested in the D-line. You have your two, you know, superstars on that line. And now, granted, if you go back and watch the tape, Jones faced double teams on almost every snap. And Colton Miller, who came back on the Raiders line and had a really, really good game, was forcing Frank Clark to take a long route around the outside to get to the quarterback. They played the two stars on the Chiefs defensive line as well as I've seen any team play them all year. And without Taco Charlton, who is of course injured and on the IR, there just really wasn't a third member of that line to step up. And because of that, the lack of pressure, when you don't pressure Derek Carr, he's an NFL quarterback. He can sit back there, and he's got fast receivers between Ruggs, who didn't really do much, but always is a threat to go deep, and Aguilar and Waller. Waller is a man. I mean, that guy is such a hard matchup. There were a couple times, I know Honey Badger tweeted out that he was feeling sick during the game, and so I think maybe, I mean, he had a pretty poor game, especially.
I was also feeling sick watching the Honey Badger during the game.
And especially tackling. He was not interested in tackling. He looked like Marcus Peters out there with just a complete lack of any sort of aggression. Every time they would play off the Raiders receivers, and anytime they would catch it, it was like the Chiefs just kind of guided them out of bounds. Like, they just didn't hit anybody, and especially Honey Badger. So that was discouraging. We've seen enough out of him enough great plays, enough great. I mean, we know Matthew is a good player, and a game like that, and really same thing with Jones and Clark. People like to get on these guys, but they are excellent, excellent football players.
Yeah.
And the fact that they didn't get any pressure or any, you know, didn't have any success, sometimes you got to credit the other team. And sometimes you know that the other team is built to stop your guys specifically, and they scheme to stop your guys specifically. And that's like, it's not quite Bill Belichick levels yet with Gruden, but it's the same type of like, if he takes something away from you, you have to just tip your hat and try and beat him another way. And I think that's what the Raiders were doing here. They were controlling our defensive line and playing a really, really outstanding offensive game plan. And our defense wasn't ready for it, just like they weren't ready the last time. And, you know, the Raiders played their Super Bowl two times already this season, and they won one of them and they lost one of them. Good for them. I think the Chiefs have their sights set a little bit higher than that game.
Yeah, I mean, I think to your point, you do sometimes just have to tip your cap. And one thing that the Raiders do have is a really good offensive line built around former Chief Rodney Hudson, who's yeah. still one of the best centers Excellent. In the game. So when you're talking about, you know, interior pressure and Jones getting double teamed, you know, you've got Rodney Hudson at the center of that line, who's playing great. I think Gabe Jackson in there too. They really, I mean, they have a stout interior. Colt Miller has really come on. He was looking like a hilarious bust after they drafted him, but he's a good player and he's huge. I mean, their offensive line, even without Trent Brown in there, is just massive, and they did a good job. And I agree with what you're saying. As big of a goofball as John Gruden is, and he is a huge goofball. Huge. I mean, like, he just is, he's such a weirdo dork, but like, he can coach. And man, listen, the Raiders have been pretty inconsistent, but they have been very, very, very well coached in their two games against the Chiefs. And I don't think that's a coincidence. Like, the fact that they, you know, didn't necessarily get up for the Buffalo Bills, the New England Patriots, that doesn't really surprise me, because those games, I mean, they count the same in the win and loss column. So, you know, maybe the Raiders probably should have spent a little bit more time preparing for those games. Maybe they'd have a little bit better record right now. But I think they spent an inordinate amount of time in the offseason and leading up to these games preparing for the Chiefs. And I think, you know, what I was hoping was going to happen in this game was, oh, well, the Raiders, the first game, they took a lot of deep shots. They did some things that we weren't expecting the Raiders to do. And, you know, what I was hoping was in the second game, we would see Steve Spagnuolo and the Chiefs defense adjust and them kind of dictate the game. And that's not what happened. The Raiders did what they wanted to do. They imposed their will on us. And you have to give credit to them for that. I mean, the Chiefs, to their credit, did take away the deep passing game more or less in this game. They did have a couple of plays that could have been very bad, that they, you know, there was some missed connections down the field. But, you know, like I said, I mean, those are the plays where they managed to get a little bit of pressure. And frankly, that's what we expected to happen in the first game, was for them to not necessarily connect on some of these deep balls, because that's what's happened. You know, Nelson Aguilar and Derek Carr, how often should that work out, right?
nice. Yeah, it's, you know, close is only good in horseshoes and hand grenades. It's something in the NFL where the difference between a bomb and an incomplete pass is so small most of the time. And the elite offenses and the elite quarterbacks and the elite receivers, they hit on those. They hit on them more than they miss, and just taking the shot isn't good enough. And the Chiefs have seen this multiple times, even with Patrick Mahomes, where he'll, you know, scramble around and hit Kaiser and he drops the ball, and that just goes down as an incomplete pass. That's all it accounts as, even though the ball was right on the money. You know, teams are going to miss those. So I would say that we would expect the Raiders to hit on those long plays as often as Carr has hit on them in his career, which is not that often. And
right.
And sure, he's got Ruggs who can take the top off, and sure, he's got, I guess, Nelson Aguilar, who really never did much in Philly and probably is just doing more in Vegas because he's featured more, not really because he's a better player. I don't know. I also
still can't. He still can't catch.
Yeah, the viral video of the guy saying they were catching those babies. Unlike Aguilar, that, yeah. That Eagles fan, that still cracks me up every time I think of Nelson Aguilar dropping that.
Yep, me too.
Balls. But same. You know, the performance by the Raiders against the Chiefs is kind of indicative to me of John Gruden as like his personality. Like he's so emotional and he gets so fired up. And he's crazy. And like, I just feel like they might not have the pieces to put together a successful game plan for 16 games, like you were talking about the Bills, the Raiders, or the Patriots, whoever. But he does have the motivation and he can get his guys knocking on wood or doing whatever they need to do in preparation for a game like the Chiefs, where the Chiefs have beaten the Raiders still. The Raiders have beaten the Chiefs 2 out of the last 15 times they played. Like, it has not been a rivalry. It has been an ass.
And that was Gruden's first win over the Chiefs.
This was, yeah, that's right.
Or last game was, yeah.
Earlier this year, right. And so it's kind of one of those deals where Gruden looks up to Andy Reid. Obviously, he's a mentor figure there. They're very close. You know, it's just, it doesn't surprise me. It's like, I know you're not the biggest college sports fan, especially college basketball, but you see this happen a lot. Me being a KU fan with a matchup against like K-State where the talent might not be there. KU might have a huge advantage in the talent, but then K-State comes in and they play them to a 3-point game or 2-point game and everyone thinks, oh, sure. What happened there? But it's just these rivalries, there's something different to it. There's more juice, there's more just emotion. And I think that's what happened here. To me as a Chiefs fan, if the Raiders are going to be competitive with the Chiefs, but not better than, just give them games every time, like, I miss those games. I'm not going to say that I want them more than I want an ass kicking, but it definitely gets me way more fired up to play the Raiders if I know it's going to be a game like this than just the last four years we've played the Raiders where they've been a complete joke. So I don't know. It could be good. It's certainly is going to be interesting to see how they respond to the loss, because they're kind of a team that it seems like can step on their own foot and turn one loss into 3 or 4. Sure. And I wouldn't really be super shocked to see a 6-4 Raiders team end the year 8-8 or 9-7 or, you know, just really lose a lot of the momentum that they had, because it seems like this was the game. If they had beaten the Chiefs here, they're going to turn their season around. They're going to be, you know, on their way to the Super Bowl or whatever the hell Raider Cody thinks is going to happen. But now it's like, well, we're playing for next year. I've on Silver and Black Pride, they're talking about their draft. They're done.
We'll talk about that a little bit more in a second, because we're going to talk about the current playoff picture now that we're at Thanksgiving. It's worth kind of discussing and talking about. But I just wanted to circle back to something that you said, you know, about the rivalry. And, you know, credit to the Raiders for making this game relevant and making the people on both sides of the fan base want to kind of get up for it. I think in hindsight, you know, obviously we all expected and hoped that they would blow them out. But in hindsight, it was kind of fun to have a close game. Yeah. Obviously, it was fun in hindsight because we won the game. If we had not won the game, then miss me with having close games if we're going to lose them. But if we're going to win them, sure, why not? I mean, it is kind of fun to have a close game, and that does kind of get the competitive juices going. Before we talk about the offense, which is the only positive in this game, we have to take a brief detour to talk about special teams. But we're going to do like the compliment sandwich, you know, where we it's not really a compliment sandwich because there's only one good thing, but I'm going to lead with that. So we'll lead with that. Harrison Butker did not miss an extra point in this game.
Hey, so
he was 5 for 5. I actually tweeted during the game. I was like, the thing about having a shootout is, like, you know, if you're going to score like 6 touchdowns in this game and you're also going to let the other side score like 6 touchdowns in this game, that puts you in a pretty precarious position.
Better hit your extra points.
You got to hit all your extra points. And to his credit, he did hit all the extra points. And they needed them. I mean, obviously, Carr threw an interception on the last drive of the game. But if Butker had missed an extra point, that's a 3-point game, and the Raiders only need a field goal. And, you know, Carr's whole approach on that last drive might have been different. Certainly. If he's driving down to try and get them into field goal range as opposed to needing to get them into the end zone to get the lead back. And so shout out to Harrison Butker. There were some close calls.
There were.
He put two of them pretty close to the right upright, but he got all five of them through. So that was
close. Hey, man, cut him a break. He's only missed 6 extra points this year.
That's preposterous.
The NFL record is 8.
That's let's hope he doesn't get there. But the rest of the special teams, Taylor, was a disaster, like always. You know, I was looking at our numbers in terms of field position, because if you just watch the game, this is where our lying eyes lie to us and deceive us. If you watched every Chiefs game this year, as you and I both have, you would expect that the Chiefs' starting field position would be just terrible, and that their opponent's field position, conversely, would be amazing. That, like, every drive for the opponent starts on the 40 and every Chiefs drive starts on the 10. That actually is not the case. In fact, the Chiefs' average start is on their own 29.3 yard line, and their opponent's average start is on the 25.7 yard line. So actually, the Chiefs have had better average starting field position than the other team, which seems impossible. It was
Doesn't
not
that probably have more to do with the defense than the special teams.
It does.
That's every drive.
Yes, I agree with that. There definitely is something to that there. There's also the fact that we have turned the ball over at a 7% clip. 7% of our drives, we have turned the ball over, whereas our opponents have turned the ball over 14.5% of the time.
Nice.
That's definitely a big part of it too. But the special teams in this game was a disaster. Again, the coverage units were bad. Every single return. I mean, it's basically the return game. Let's get this.
Yeah.
Let's get
Butker kicked one out of bounds. He's done that before.
I had forgotten completely about that. But yes, that was also terrible. And he kicked it out of bounds because the Chiefs were trying to get cute and like kick the ball down to the one.
Yeah, he banged one through the uprights on the opening kickoff.
Yeah, and then they, Tobe, for whatever reason, thought it would be cute to have Butker, like, drop the ball on the one on the right side of the end zone, and he just missed and kicked it out of bounds. Like, what is the point? Like, I get the idea there is that you're going to try and force them to return it and then pop them. I don't really understand the logic, though, Taylor, because we clearly, like, Butker has the leg to get a touchback every single time he kicks the ball, right?
Yep.
So whenever we let the other team return it, it's because Dave Tobe is like, well, we want to let the other team return it.
Yep.
And that's because you want to try and stuff them inside where they get a touchback and give
force
them
a fumble. Turnovers,
or force a fumble, we'll get a turnover.
Yep.
But the logic is just so internally inconsistent, because if you want the other team to return the ball, you know, like, because you feel like you can put them in worse starting field position or whatever it is, why are you returning the ball, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. The Chiefs returners are terrible. The whole philosophy doesn't make any sense to me. Now, the Chiefs have one return touchdown this year.
Yep.
They got a kick return, Byron Pringle, against the Broncos. Okay, so, you know, like, if you're going to bring the ball out, that's why you're doing it, is so that you can occasionally break a touchdown. But, like, why? Like, were all of these holding penalties and blocks in the back and all this crappy field position that we have to deal with, is that worth the one kick return touchdown that we're going to get this year against the Broncos in a game that we won by, like, 26 points? No, of course
no,
not.
No.
It's preposterous. We should just kick the ball out of the end zone every time on kickoffs, and we should conversely take a knee or fair catch every single time.
Yeah.
Don't return the ball. It's stupid.
Yeah, they should work it out of the game plan. That's probably fair. I think part of what you're seeing is probably Dave Tobe's belief that his unit is better than their performance. And, you know, fact or fiction there, he's been a successful special teams coordinator for a long time, and he had a gigantic stretch his whole career until the Baltimore game. He didn't allow a special teams return against him, and I think he probably goes into a game plan with quite a bit of swagger and thinks that, all right, we're going to be the difference this week. We're going to pop a big return. We're going to stuff. I don't know. It's clearly not showing up in the actual games, at least not enough. And whether that's some sort of scheme mismatch or whether they hold on literally every return,
every
single
time.
And when that's happening, that's a failure by the special teams to understand what a hold is. I mean, that's coaching. That's not one guy that's getting the hold every time. That is, Dave is not emphasizing enough to these guys that when you hold on a return, it literally doesn't matter what else happens. We start at the 10-yard line. The offense is behind the eight ball right away. Like, it's just, it's such a detriment to be doing that. And yet, especially in this Vegas game, they just set the Chiefs up. The Chiefs had six drives of 70 yards or more in this game, which is insane. They had the one that was the interception, and then the other five were touchdown drives. And it's just, that's not what you would expect or what you should expect your offense to be able to overcome. Like, you just shouldn't be set up that deep in their own territory every single time. And fortunately, the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes, and fortunately, they're able to overcome that and sustain a long drive and punch it into the end zone and win the game and score 35 points and all that stuff. But it's a failure on Dave Tobe's part for sure. And it's something that if they don't get it turned around, the special teams will lose the Chiefs a ball game. No question in my mind, if this is the performance they put out moving forward, it is going to cost the Chiefs.
This is a good transition. I like that, because let's talk about the offense that, despite being put in a hole by the defense, which couldn't stop anybody, and the special teams, which put them in a huge disadvantage on virtually every drive, this is what the Chiefs did in this game. So the first drive of the game, the Chiefs started on their own 15. They took 14 plays to go down 85 yards, score a touchdown. The second drive of the game, they got the ball on their own 27, seven plays, 3 minutes, 44 seconds, 73 yards, and a touchdown. Then they had a drive that started off with DeMarcus Robinson, who I guess we can just get him out of the way right now.
No shit.
He was terrible in this game, except he did have a clutch fourth down conversion later in the game. That does not absolve him from all the stupid crap that he did in this game, including this game. He caught the ball. He did that thing that you and I both hate that we always talk about, where he goes backwards thinking he's going to get more yards. He, in the course of going backwards, sticks his hand on the defender's face mask. And so he not only loses yardage, he also gets a penalty. So this drive started the Chiefs 25. It goes backwards 4 yards, and they have to punt. And then the fourth drive of the game, they start in their own 13. They move the ball 73 yards. They get all the way down into the red zone on the other end. And DeMarcus Robinson, again, and Pat was pretty diplomatic about this in the post game. He said, you know, that he read the play one way, and DeMarcus, they both were kind of doing, you know, the post snap as the play developed kind of reads, because the Chiefs do give their wide receivers a lot of latitude to kind of adjust the play as they see fit. And that fits with a quarterback like Mahomes, who's very good off schedule and so on and so forth. Didn't work in this instance because DeMarcus shook his guy, made him fall down, and then didn't go to where he was supposed to go. And Pat threw it directly to the defender, who then stood up and caught the ball. And man, that sucked. But that was a drive that started on 13 that could very easily have been a touchdown if DeMarcus is in the right place at the right time. Then, after half, Chiefs get a drive starting on their own 7. They go 93 yards for a touchdown. Then they had to punt. The next
7.
They started on their own 9 was their next touchdown drive after that. So they had touchdown drives in this game of 85, 73, 93, 91, and 75.
My God.
There's one of those drives that was started at their own 25. All the rest of them, you know, and one at the 27. But man, three touchdown drives of 85 or more yards in this game. Unbelievable performance by the Chiefs. And obviously, none more clutch than the last drive of the game, which was kind of a new situation for Pat.
Yeah, it's, you know, Carr goes down there and hits old man Witten to take the lead with a minute 43. And I think everyone, especially after the playoff run that the Chiefs had, everybody knew minute 43 down 3 with Mahomes with the ball, that's probably a minute 40 too long. Like, it's just it, but you know, be that as it may, it was a comeback drive, and the Chiefs haven't found themselves, like you said, really down much lately at all. They've been handling business, and obviously a 9-1 team isn't going to be facing too many deficits, but Mahomes was so surgical on this final drive. He knew every single play. He hits Tyreek Hill for 10, Tyreek Hill for 9, McCole Hardman for 16. That was about the only time McCole Hardman showed up in this game. I don't know if he's feeling
Do you know why that is? Because COVID? It is. So he's still because he came off the COVID list, he was the emergency break glass.
Oh, and Byron Pringle
in this game. And then when Pringle got hurt, that was when he started to show up. So I was wondering that too. I was like, McColl, I have not heard his name literally all night, but that's why he
gotcha.
He came in relief of Byron Pringle. We'll talk about that in when we get to the news, but he came out of this game with an injury. So
gotcha.
And play then, by McColl.
Yes, for sure. And then Mahomes hits eventual 2020 Offensive Player of the Year, Travis Kelce, for 15 yards. And Daryl Williams was in the game on the second to last play of the game.
Sure, why not? Daryl Williams.
With Clyde and with, Clyde and Le'Veon has had three total touchdowns in this game. And Le'Veon didn't really run a ton, but Clyde certainly had a good game. I'm not entirely sure why Daryl Williams is the – not only is he out there, maybe they like his pass protection, but why is Patrick throwing him the ball? I mean, I guess
– I don't know.
I guess check down or whatever. Anyways, so then
– he certainly didn't do very much with it despite having quite a bit of space.
Correct.
On that play. But
and then the Chiefs call their final timeout, and I'm thinking they're 22 yards away with 34 seconds left, and they're down three. So in that situation, after their final timeout, I'm thinking, damn, they've got like one play before they have to kick the game-tying field goal and send this to overtime. Because if they get tackled in the middle of the field here, they've obviously got to run up and spike and all that stuff. But Mahomes drifts to the right in the pocket, and Jonathan Abram, bless his heart, we're not very big fans of him because he's a punk-ass bitch, basically.
Yeah.
But he thought Mahomes was going to run like an idiot, and he comes forward and leaves eventual 2020 Offensive Player of the Year, Travis Kelce, all by his lonesome.
Ridiculous.
For the game-winning 22-yard pass. Sorensen picks off Carr, like you said, on the final Raiders drive, and Chiefs kneel it out.
We just have to break down this play a little bit because Jonathan Abram, let's be frank, the Raiders defense is pretty bad, and there's not a lot of guys on the Raiders defense that are like household names in Chiefs Kingdom, I don't feel like.
Yeah,
Jonathan Abram is, but for like all the wrong reasons, right? Like he's constantly hitting people late. He's always getting flagged for it. Like he had an extremely dirty play against Tyreek in week 5 where he hit him like a full second before the ball got there.
Yeah.
And was not flagged for it. It was ridiculous. And in fact, whatever jabroni was on the call was like, oh, that's a good play. It's like, it wasn't a good play. It was obvious pass interference.
It was an illegal play.
He hit the shit out of him. He hit the shit out of Tyreek late after Tyreek had gone out of bounds in this game and was flagged for that. And he just is, it's fascinating. If you've been on Twitter, I've definitely have retweeted this a couple of times, the dots, you know, where they show the player tracking data and everything like that. Uh-huh. It's just so funny to watch the play materialize, because as soon as Mahomes breaks the pocket and starts heading towards the line of scrimmage, Abram is like, I'm going to kill Patrick Mahomes. I'm going to end his life right here, right now. I'm going to go helmet to helmet. I'm going to spear him. I'm going to break him in half. And literally the second he breaks, Mahomes is like, you dumb bitch, I got you right where I want you. And he just drops it right over his head. There's literally no one near Travis Kelce. And I think maybe Damon Arnette was the closest defender. And you see him just like, he literally like throws up his arms. He's like, what are we doing, guys? Like, Jonathan, what are you doing, bro? Like, I'm over here guarding whoever I'm supposed to be guarding. And Travis Kelce, there's literally nobody within 10 yards of Travis Kelce.
No,
which is insane. Because
the Raiders defense was socially distancing hard on that play.
They were. And eventual Offensive Player of the Year, Travis Kelce, had in this game, Taylor, I mean, total in this game, he had 10 targets, 8 receptions for 127 yards and a touchdown. So prior to that play, which was a 22-yard touchdown, he already had 105 yards in this game.
Ooh, quick math, right? Good.
It's like – it's as well as a pass completion, by the way. We can't short him his pass.
Pringle should have punched in if he takes the right read on that.
He did, and he had to really fight to get the first down, but he did get it. But it was a beautiful play design. In any case, the point is this, Taylor. Travis Kelce has brutalized the Raiders for years, and he brutalized the Raiders again in this game, and he is currently the third leading receiver, or the third? Leading receiver,
third right, in the behind. NFL, 16 yards behind DeAndre Hopkins and 10 yards behind Stephon Diggs.
He is the third leading receiver in the entire NFL, not at tight end, just he has the third most receiving yards of any player. And somehow on the most critical play of the game, the Raiders found a way to just completely not cover him at all, which was amazing and a total gift. And man, I don't know. I don't know if they had seen something on tape that, you know, or if Mahomes just knew that Abram in his nature would want to come up and try and, you know, hit a bitch, but it didn't work out for him.
No. And I don't know if anybody would have felt comfortable with that game going to overtime, the way both defenses were not able to stop a nosebleed.
Yeah, and flip a coin. It's like end of Charlie McDennis. That's literally
exactly right. And it'd be also like the end of the 2018 AFC Championship game. Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, when you're not able to stop something like – when you're not able to stop the other team – punching that in for seven instead of settling for the game tying field goal, which the Chiefs easily could have done. And I'm sure still would have felt okay with their chances of winning that game in overtime. But it just shows that Mahomes is out there for your throat every single time. And Kelce is unbelievable. And his ability to still find soft spots in zones and still be able to have that connection with Patrick, and they're the best quarterback to receiver combination, maybe second by Mahomes and Hill, but easily in the NFL. They're unbelievable. I am so blown away by, and you know, Tyreek is sitting on the year with 752 yards and 10 touchdowns, and Kelce has 896 and 7. They could have a pair of 1,000-yard 10 touchdown receivers. And I mean, no one will be surprised. They're the best 1-2 weapons in the NFL. Better than DK and Lockett. Better than who would be two there? Yeah, I mean they're
Kyler and Nook maybe.
I'm thinking Tyreek and Kelce are the best 1-2.
Oh, you know, sure.
The best two weapons that anybody's got. They're just such a horrible matchup for everybody. I love watching them.
Yeah, Travis Kelce is on pace for 1,433 yards receiving, which is insane. I don't know what the single season. Is that the single season record for tight end?
Because it would be Kittle got when Kelce finished 20. I guess that was 18. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Kittle had 1,377 that year. Yeah. So
and he only Travis beat Kelce, him by 40 or 50 yards or whatever.
Kelce is on pace to obliterate the tight end receiving record by 60 yards and. He's probably going to finish with double-digit touchdowns, which he's only done once before in his career. I mean, we're witnessing a historic career-best season for Travis Kelce, and he's 31 years old. I mean, it's amazing. And I don't know if the Chiefs knew that this exactly is what was coming, but you know, they had some ideas about what they were getting when they extended him earlier this year. I know Certainly. That was a little bit of a surprise to some people, but man, he looks amazing. And we've previously done some work. I've written on what the aging curve looks like for tight ends that have the pedigree that Travis Kelce does. And there's no reason to think that he won't continue to be productive for many years to come, but boy, we're going to put a pin in this one, Taylor. The Chiefs win 35-31. They're 9-1. They're three games up on the Raiders, who are 6-4 in the AFC West, with six games to play. And so as long as the Chiefs take care of business and they don't lose more than three games, the Raiders have no chance of getting back into the division race. This is a big win.
Huge.
Let's talk some news. We mentioned Byron Pringle.
News. Haven't done that. We'll drop it a bit.
Sure. Yeah. No, I was slow on the uptake there because we haven't done that in a bit. Byron Pringle went to the IR this year. That means he's out for at least 3 weeks. I've not seen how serious it is. It was an ankle injury he suffered in this game. That's why Mecole Hardman was in on the final drive. But he is going to be on the IR. So he's going to miss for sure at least 3 weeks. That is kind of hurting the Chiefs a little bit because
No big deal. The special teams is doing fine. They'll pick it up without him.
Not only that, but we don't know when Sammy Watkins is going to be back.
Jesus Christ.
We haven't mentioned his name, but he was off the injury report for one day.
It was probably like 4 hours.
He practiced fully for, I think, one practice session last week before hurting himself again in practice the following day and then missing the game.
Fortunately.
I don't know what his status is for this week against the Bucks. I have not heard yet, but that does get the wide receiver depth a little bit thin. Marcus Kemp, I think, is currently fourth on the depth chart at wide receiver, which is not where you want to be. That would make DeMarcus is number two and probably McColl is number three. It's not ideal. Garrett Dieter was activated and elevated to the active roster. So, you know, maybe we'll get to see Sheepdog out there. Get well soon, Byron Pringle. And get well soon, Sammy Watkins. We didn't talk about this at all somehow last week. It kind of got lost in the shuffle of Raiders week and everything that was going on. But the Chiefs signed DeAndre Baker, cornerback, former Giant. I am going to have to dive into the whole legal situation and break that down for you guys. I promise I will do that at some point. But long story short, Taylor, he was arrested and he was charged with robbing a bunch of people at gunpoint. And then
at a barbecue.
Yeah, at a barbecue with Quandre Diggs, the Seahawk. Quentin Dunbar, I think it was.
Quentin Dunbar, that is correct.
Quandre Diggs is also Seahawk, so that was like a high-level error, yes. I think, there. But that, yeah, that's right. So, long story short, last week, all of his charges were dropped. And, in fact, the attorney that was representing some of the victims in this case was charged with extortion. So, there's a story there. I'll dive into it. But the point is, he was cleared of all charges. And very promptly after that, got on a plane to Kansas City, and we got our guy.
Yeah, it's fun anytime that your team, the Chiefs in this case, take a shot at a guy that is a buy low but potentially high ceiling guy. And that's exactly what happened here. He is a recent first round draft pick that obviously had a situation where the Giants had to let him go, and then turned out that was a mistake on the Giants' part. And much like the Browns picking up Kareem Hunt, although Kareem actually did,
yeah, Kareem did it, but yeah, he's on video.
Football terms, it's the same type of deal where a guy is, you know, if you bring a guy in and if he plays up to his potential and doesn't get in any more trouble, it's a boon for the team. And that's what Baker is. He's not going to come in and set the world on fire right away. He's got a lot of catching up to do as a football player. And it's just a fun project for the Chiefs. It's like Taco Charlton, and it's that type of situation where you've got a guy that maybe just wasn't in the right spot. Maybe he just didn't have the right coaching, or he wasn't quite motivated or something like that. And if you change the scenery up, sometimes that can do wonders for a guy. And Baker's young, and the Chiefs certainly could use more cornerback help. And it's kind of like getting a free first round draft pick a little bit. I mean, obviously Chiefs wouldn't get his services from last year or this year, but they can pay him whatever they want. And it's just a fun move by Brett Veach. He continues to show that he's doing everything he can, kicking every tire on anyone that can help the Chiefs win. And I just love that about Brett, that he's not afraid to take chances.
Yep. Some minor news on the offensive line side. Stefan Wisniewski is back, a Super Bowl starter for the Chiefs. He was recently released from the Steelers with an injury. I think it was a pec injury. Does that sound right? He is back with the Chiefs and may find himself on the active roster soon, because Mitch Schwartz, after going like, what, 6-7 straight years without missing a single snap in the NFL, is now on the injured reserve and will be out for at least 3 games. He's got a back injury. That's always a little bit scary with offensive linemen, and we don't know a whole lot about what's actually going on with him other than he has a back injury. But Martinez Rankin was activated from the COVID list, so he's going to be not the COVID list. But
just regular IR, right?
Yeah, just regular IR. He had an injury earlier in the year, so he's back as well. So the Chiefs are getting some reinforcements to hopefully paper up the large hole at right tackle left by All-Pro Mitchell Schwartz, at least for the next 3 games. So get well soon, Mitch. But those other guys, we're glad to have them back, especially Wisniewski. He did a good job for us last year. Agreed. Taylor, it's Thanksgiving, and that means it's time to start looking at the playoff picture, because we're pretty deep into it now. We have a pretty good idea of which teams are out of it, even the ones that maybe haven't necessarily been mathematically eliminated. So I'm gonna give you the current playoff standings here, and then I want to kind of break down, you know, where you're at with these teams, who you kind of see as legitimate threats to the Chiefs. I mean, to the extent that any team is a legitimate threat to the Chiefs in the AFC, and right. who doesn't really scare you that much. So obviously the Steelers are 10-0. They play the Ravens on Thursday night on Thanksgiving. So that game might be over by the time you all listen to this episode. Depends on how fast Taylor can edit, but and how fast you click that listen button, tell your friends. But they're currently 10-0. They're playing the Ravens. The Ravens have a bunch of idiots on COVID right now, so they're doing a great job. They're giving us a lot of help. Steelers are currently 10-0. The Chiefs are 9-1, so they're one game behind the Steelers. If the Steelers drop a game to an AFC opponent or a common opponent with the Chiefs, Chiefs are very likely going to pick up the tiebreaker there. We can get into that further down the road if that scenario arises, but the Chiefs are in a good situation as far as tiebreakers are concerned. Bills, Colts, Titans, and Browns are all 7-3, and they are seeded in that order just due to their division winning. Bills and Colts are division leaders. Titans and Browns are wild cards at this point. And then the Raiders at 6-4, who hold tiebreakers over the 6-4 Ravens, who are currently out of the playoffs, and the 6-4 Dolphins, who are currently out of the playoffs. Raiders have tiebreakers over each of those teams. So if the season ended today, the Raiders would be the 7th seed. They would play the Chiefs, who are currently the 2 seed. So that's where we're at as of spicy. November 24th. It is spicy. Maybe a little bit too spicy for me, but we'll talk about that in a second. The next tier below the Ravens, Dolphins, and Raiders at 6-4 are the Broncos and the Patriots, who are 4-6. Those, realistically, I mean, neither of those teams is in contention here, right? Like, I mean, they're technically not out of it, but it would take a wild turn of events for either of those teams to get into it. So really, we've got 9 teams: Steelers, Chiefs, Bills, Colts, Titans, Browns, Raiders, Ravens, and Dolphins. I've got my rankings, Taylor, kind of which of these teams scare me the least and which of them scare me the most. But I'm curious where you stand on this situation.
Yep. So do we want to – let's just kind of talk about each team and where we rank them as we talk about them.
Sure, yeah, that sounds great.
So let's start with the team that I believe both of us would most like to face out of those 8 opponents, and that's the Cleveland Browns. Yes. They are led by a quarterback that is no longer good. I don't know if he ever was good, but he certainly is not good at this point. They do have a dangerous rushing attack, and that's always, you know, kind of the scary bugaboo in December and January is you got to run the football to win the games. In this case, I think the Chiefs would absolutely clown the Browns. I'm not scared of that team at all. I would put them number 1, and I'm assuming you do too.
I'm in full agreement there. The Browns do not scare me at all. They're 7-3, but they actually have a point differential of -23. They have a worse point differential than the Chargers, who are at -13, and the Chargers are 3-7, and the Browns are 7-3. Oof. So that's just classic Chargers there.
Chargers,
but it's the new Browns. They're 7-3 with a -23 point differential. They're not a very good team. Their defense isn't that good, and their offense isn't that good. It's kind of hard to understand what it is exactly that they do well, but they would not really scare me. In that same kind of mold, the Dolphins to me would be my next team, and I don't know where you stand on them. They're currently out of the playoffs at 6-4. They're playing really well, and they do have 2 things that they do really well, unlike the Browns. They have a very good defense. They have very good special teams. But that offense just doesn't scare me at all. They just lost to – the reason they're on the outside looking in is because they just lost to the Broncos, who are terrible. So I the Dolphins, they don't really scare me.
Yep, I have them 2nd as well. I think that the quarterback matchup there would at least intrigue me about that. The Chiefs are going to see the Dolphins before a playoff matchup, so we can see a little bit better about how that shakes out. But I definitely think that Tua's still got some growing to do. Fitz can bite you. He can, as the Patriots found out in Week 17 last year, if you let him – he can have a good game, and you know, Devontae Parker's fine, but in general, and they do have the best corner combination in the NFL for sure. Xavien Howard and Byron Jones are unbelievable. But that being said, I don't think they have the horses to hang with playoff Chiefs. So I would put Miami 2nd as well there. I think my 3rd team is going to surprise a lot of people. 3rd out of 8 here that I would like to face. But I'm picking the team that the Chiefs are 3-0 against here. I'm picking the Baltimore Ravens. I look at the remaining six teams, and I think about how comfortable I would be in a matchup with that team. And, you know, if Lamar was still doing his Lamar stuff, it'd be one thing. We still beat Lamar when he was at peak Lamar. I mean, right. when he was MVP, unanimous MVP. Chiefs still took care of business. But this version just doesn't scare me. He's just not able to pass the football anymore, and he doesn't really have anybody to pass to. Like, I'm sure if you put Lamar on the Chiefs, he would look like unbelievable, but he's not. He's on the Ravens, and he's thrown to Willie Snead and Hollywood Brown instead of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. Mark Andrews is fine. Their defense doesn't scare me nearly as much as they did early in the year. They haven't been able to stop a lot of people lately. I like the matchup with Baltimore. I've got them third. Where do you have them?
Yeah, I had the Titans third, but I can't disagree with any of your reasoning with the Ravens. They stink right now. Lamar, he is not throwing the ball well. Their offensive line, with Marshall Yanda retiring and then Ronnie Staley, I can never remember.
Staley.
I think. Okay. Right? I think that's right.
Am I thinking of Deuce Staley?
There's a lot of Staleys in the NFL and a lot of Stanleys in the NFL.
Staley. It's Staley. Okay. I would have said Staley.
That's what I'm talking about. He is on IR. He had just signed a huge deal, and they lost him for the year, their left tackle. So their offensive line is not nearly as good as it was last year. There's a lot of rumblings that, you know, Greg Roman is getting figured out, just like he did in San Francisco with Colin Kaepernick. They don't really scare me at all either. It just is – I kind of had them a spot higher than you did, just out of respect for what they did last year when they were 14-2. But to your point, even last year, the Chiefs obviously beat them and then beat them again week three of this year when they were 2-0. So
you had them fourth, and I had them third.
Yes, I had them fourth. I had the Titans third. The Titans just beat the Ravens, and they are playing better football than the Ravens are right now, for sure. But, you know, this is another team, obviously, the Chiefs beat last year on their way to the playoffs. The Titans can't pressure the quarterback, and I feel like a team that can't pressure the quarterback is going to have a really hard time with us. Their secondary is fine, but they just don't have – they are the worst team in the NFL on third down on defense. And we have literally the greatest third down quarterback
ever.
He is miles and miles better than every other quarterback in the NFL on third down. And the Titans are literally like the worst third down defense ever. So I feel like that would be a very bad matchup for the Titans. Their offense, you know, they've got some pieces, Tannehill, obviously, Derrick Henry, but they don't really scare me all that much.
That Sammy Watkins bomb in the AFC Championship game was on third down. I think they would be seeing a lot more of that in that rematch. I just, you know, they don't really match up well with the Chiefs. They just don't really do the things that bother the Chiefs. The Chiefs shut down Derrick Henry in the playoffs last year. Now, obviously, week nine last year, that was a different story. But either way, I like that. I like Tennessee there at third for you. I had Tennessee fifth, but I do think that the fourth and fifth teams I'm pretty interchangeable with. I've got the Bills at slightly better matchup than Tennessee, and I think part of that, slightly more desirable matchup, part of that is just the memory of that Monday afternoon game that the Chiefs looked really, really good in, and the Bills didn't come with a good game plan, and Clyde ran all over them. And it was just Josh Allen doesn't really seem like he's quite in MVP mode anymore, although he's still having a hell of a good season for him. I don't see the Bills doing a lot to be able to really bother the Chiefs. Certainly would be a tougher matchup than some of the teams we listed before that. But I had Tennessee fifth, and you had them third. And then I have my next team is Buffalo at fourth. Where'd you have Buffalo?
I had Buffalo at, I guess it would be fifth.
Okay. So right around the same.
Yeah. We've kind of got the Titans, Ravens, Bills tier. We just have them in a different order. And I think your comments on the Bills are well taken. The funny thing about Josh Allen is, like, he looked like the old Josh Allen when we played him. And then he's looked good against other teams. So it's kind of like, is Josh Allen good, or do we just know how to shut him down? Like, what exactly is the deal there?
He beat the Seahawks. I mean, that was a pretty good performance.
Yeah, and he played, and the Seahawks defense is very bad, but he shredded them. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, they just have a different I don't know. They're kind of a little bit of an unknown, and they're kind of dangerous. Like, their defense was really good last year. It's kind of like, you know, if they showed up and they were able to play a good defensive game, and Josh Allen, he's the classic Charlie Kelly wild card. Like, he's capable of anything, right? So, like, he could cut the brakes, you know, like, he could just, you know, stare at you, whatever it would be. They're a little bit of a wild card for me. So I had them a little bit higher on the list. So then our top tier, it sounds like our top three teams are the same: Colts, Raiders, and Steelers. And can we agree that the Colts are kind of at the bottom of that tier?
We cannot.
Oh, really?
Yep. I personally would feel better about facing the Steelers than the Colts.
Interesting.
Yep. It's just kind of part of it is I think about recent matchups with the recent matchup with Pittsburgh, 2018 week two. It was a long time ago, worst defense for Pittsburgh, but I do.
Yeah. Like a
miles difference. Yeah, for sure. But I still feel that the Steelers have kind of been playing with a little bit of smoke and mirrors this year. They've kind of skated through with some close victories against bad teams that they've pulled out, you know, and I don't really think now their defense is excellent. I mean, best defense in the NFL probably. And they do have some good weapons. I really like Chase Claypool. But I don't really see Ben getting in a shootout with Patrick and keeping up. I just don't really think that's a situation that scares me a ton. And I also don't think Pittsburgh is the type to like grind it out and like, you know, James Conner, three yards in a cloud of dust. Like they don't really, that's not really the Steelers of today. And I feel good about playing the Steelers. I guess part of that when I think about the Steelers versus the other two teams is that I just feel the other two teams are more familiar with us, especially Phillip Rivers on the Colts. If this were Jacoby Brissett or whoever, it'd be one thing. But I think that that Rivers and the Raiders both kind of are used to us and our tricks and stuff. And so I've got Pittsburgh as my sixth team.
At the bottom of this tier. See, I have them at the top of this tier. And I think that's pretty much just a recognition that they have an elite unit. I mean, like the best unit on any of these three teams is the Steelers defense. But you're
probably
right.
The best unit of any of these teams in the playoffs. That's not the Chiefs. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I agree. But you know, they don't have a lot of glaring weaknesses. Like the Raiders, for instance, their defense is absolutely terrible. The Colts, I guess, don't really have any glaring weaknesses, but they do have Phillip Rivers as their quarterback. I mean, I think
he's looked better this year.
Yeah, he has. He has because he's behind like one of the
best offensive line.
Yeah, exactly. The Steelers don't really scare me. I mean, you said that you're not afraid of the Steelers. I'm not really afraid of any of these teams.
No.
The Raiders are in this tier despite being 6-4. They're currently the seventh seed because they are the only team on this list to have beaten the Chiefs in the last calendar year. And so they deserve a modicum of respect from us because they, you know, like it's hard to be scared of a team that you haven't seen beat you recently. And none of these teams have done that except for the Raiders. So
that's why I ranked the Raiders last.
Yep.
I do not want to play the Raiders again. I know some people do. I'm not interested in it. I don't need the bragging rights. The Chiefs have plenty of bragging rights over the Raiders recently. That's not a game that fires me up in the playoffs. It's the worst case scenario is losing to the Raiders in the playoffs. That's worse than not making the playoffs. That is the absolute doomsday scenario, just as it was losing to them in a home game in week 5. That's the one this year that the Chiefs shouldn't have lost in the regular season. And I have seen them play the Chiefs 2 times harder than I've seen a lot of teams play the Chiefs over the last calendar year. And I have no interest in seeing that again.
You know, what's wild too, especially for you and I, who famously, like, we did a roast of Derek Carr on like the 5th or 6th episode of this podcast back in February or March, but
roasted him basically every week since.
Derek Carr is probably the best quarterback in the AFC playoff field besides Patrick Mahomes, at least playing this year. I mean, Josh Allen is up there. I guess Ryan Tannehill is up there. Lamar, the way he's playing right now, is nowhere close. Obviously, Baker, Tua,
Rivers,
Phillip Rivers, and Big Ben. I mean,
yeah,
Statistically, it would be really hard to make the case against Derek Carr being the second best quarterback in the AFC playoff field, which is crazy. Yeah. But it just is hard.
Probably would take Ben at this point over Carr. Well, and I guess take is a weird way of saying it, but I still think Ben is probably a better quarterback than Derek Carr. But it's close, and it's crazy that it's close. It's crazy. I mean, Carr has been so bad for his entire career up until this year. And he's just kind of figured something out. I don't know what it was. I don't know if he'll continue to figure it out or if he's just kind of blacked out and is like, oh my God, I'm playing good and I have no idea how I'm doing it. I'm not throwing the ball away on fourth down and I'm not crying in the turf after getting sacked. I don't know what the deal is, but I hope he kind of loses it because it's not fun.
What makes the Raiders scary, and I think the only thing that would earn them the top spot, because it's not really the raw numbers, or even the raw personnel, but like you said, like we talked about when we recap the game. I mean, the Raiders clearly really don't like us, and
no, not at all,
and really want to beat us. And like obviously, we're talking about a playoff matchup. Like every team wants to win in the playoffs, right, and get to the Super Bowl. Yeah. Problem is, the Raiders, like their level of intensity in the two regular season games we played with them has already been like way playoff. Higher than I would expect for it's any been
playoff atmosphere.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like more intense than a playoff atmosphere in a lot of ways. And so I would be a little bit afraid of what that intensity level would be. And maybe it would be a bad thing. I mean, listen, like you definitely can be
over emotional.
You can be over emotional. Jonathan Abram, he got a little over emotional on that last play of the game when he was supposed to be covering Travis Kelce and he wanted to come up and pop our quarterback instead. I don't know.
I think there's everyone wants to win, but not everyone wants to beat you specifically. Yes. And while the Chiefs would have that same motivation to beat the Raiders, while clearly this game means a ton to the Chiefs, clearly that's not, but it probably means more to the Raiders. The Chiefs just won the Super Bowl. It definitely does. This is the one. If they can knock the Chiefs off, even if the Raiders beat the Chiefs and then lost in the AFC Championship game or whatever, they would feel better about that than if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. They just have more to win by beating the Chiefs, and it's dangerous. They're backed into a corner.
And because they're a division rival, I mean, it all comes back to that, right? Like the bragging rights you get from knocking off the Chiefs, like any of these teams beating the Chiefs, the reigning champions, it would be a big deal and it would mean a lot to them. But they wouldn't be rubbing our noses in it because they don't play us two times a year every year. And so I agree, they're dangerous. I don't need to play them again. If we do, it'll be fine. I'm sure we'll beat them, but I would prefer not to. Now, if we play them again and we beat them, that obviously would be amazing for all the reasons. Obviously, for all the reasons that it would be amazing for them if they beat us, it would
be
great. Can
you imagine a Chiefs-Raiders AFC championship game after the first two games that we've had?
Ugh. Let's put a pin in that one. I can't go there right now. It's just too intense. We got a couple of mailbag questions, Taylor. We want to give back. We've been trying to do a couple mailbag questions a week, and we got one from a new convert to the Chiefs Kingdom at Chiefs Cody. Little turncoat. So maybe go follow him at Chiefs Cody. Actually, I think it's at Chief Cody. Yep. So welcome him to the Chiefs Kingdom. He writes, long-time listener, first-time mailbag for IASIC. What are the top five things a new Chiefs convert needs to do in order to gain legitimacy as a fan? So, welcome, Chiefs Cody. We've converted you over, and nice avatar. We love your AVI on Twitter. That's a good-looking picture. Listen, the five things that you need to do to gain legitimacy as a fan. So, first and foremost, this is of religious importance. You must declare that Patrick Mahomes is the one true GOAT. And you must put no other quarterbacks before him. All right. That's what you gotta stop. Now, number two, and this might be a little bit tough, but you can find a way, right? This is possible to do in 2020. You gotta find a way to backdate some tweets or something. So you got some receipts from the dark times, right? Like whenever somebody
That's good.
me, whenever somebody accuses me of bandwagoning, which people love to do, they obviously know nothing about me, but they're like, oh, Chio, you just became a Chiefs fan last year because of Patrick Mahomes. Okay, listen, we're bandwagoning this podcast. We're definitely front runners. We started a podcast after we won the Super Bowl, right? There's no getting around it. We started a podcast because it was really fun to talk about the Chiefs because we just won the Super Bowl, right? Like, we literally exchanged texts on Sunday night that we weren't going to do a show this week if we lost the game. Okay, but you and I have been through some shit. I have a tweet from 2010 that I like to pull out. I'm just going to read the tweet here. It's actually sad. It says, this was the first year that I was on Twitter, by the way, 2010. Matt Castle, QB rating 98.8. Philip Rivers, 103.3. Castle only has one wide receiver, parentheses, Bo. And Castle played appendixless. New poster boy for Tough, question mark.
Oh, that this is saucy.
It's saucy. I was really hyping the Castle train. The new poster boy for Tough, that was a comment. I can still remember this video. That Trent Dilfer made in 2010 about Philip Rivers, which was obviously completely laughable because Philip Rivers is like the biggest bitch in the world. But third, Taylor, and this is going to be a crucial point here. Cody, if you're going to be a part of the Chiefs Kingdom, there's a rule that we have, which is that you're going to have to be extremely toxic on Twitter during games, okay? During the games and immediately following losses only, okay? Yeah. Those are the times that you're allowed to be toxic and, in fact, are encouraged and expected to be toxic.
Yep.
If you are on Twitter and tweeting during the game or immediately after a loss, you just have to be the most toxic person in the entire world. Chiefs Kingdom, Chiefs Twitter, extremely toxic during games. However, the rest of the time, you are not allowed to be negative at all. Okay.
Nope.
Like, you're not allowed to
not for call a second.
Players. You're not allowed to point out the problems with the team. Okay. Positive vibes only, except during the game, negative vibes only.
That's great. We also have Chief Cody for you. Fourth, you must tag the official Chiefs Twitter account every single time an NFL player gets cut. You never know if they're not following the waiver wire as closely as you are and they didn't realize
that's the direct line
available.
To Brett Beach.
Yeah, you know, that's how they find out. They check their mentions and they say, oh, dude, everybody wants us to go pick this guy up. Do you think we should scout him? Do you think we should do something about it? So make sure you get that out there. If they don't have you tagging them, they're never going to know that a player's available. And fifth, you must construct a room in your house for the sole purposes of filming a crappy YouTube channel. So this is more specific to you, Chiefs Cody, than it is to the general kingdom. But we really need you. If you're going to be legitimate, you've got to have people watching you watch Chiefs games and crying when the Chiefs lose, which will never happen again. But and you've just got to really just embrace the whole persona there. So please build a room in your house for the Chiefs.
Yeah, with wallpaper behind it and everything. That's going to be extremely necessary. So there you have it, Chiefs Cody. Welcome to Chiefs Kingdom. You've done the right thing, but those are the steps that the hoops that you need to jump through to be accepted as legitimate. And so we're looking forward to seeing that from you. We have another mailbag question from our man Corey. Corey04 at Corey04, the artist chief. Mailbag question. Who are the top two best and top two worst NFL actors in commercials, viral videos, SNL skits, or TV appearances? So I'll go first, Taylor. And my bests, I'm going to take Pat Obligatory. Actually think that he's an underrated actor. I think he has good comedic timing, and he really just owns it, right? He's just very
confident.
He's very earnest, and he wants to do a good job, as he does in all things. And the all-time best, I'm going to loop them all together. I actually saw Cooper Manning in a commercial last weekend. It's the Mannings, Eli, Peyton, and now Cooper, all of them. And in a few years, we're going to be seeing Eli's kid, you know, his son, I think, is coming up through the ranks now. He's a big time high school prospect. The Mannings are unbelievably good at TV. They all have such good comedic timing.
Archie's a good actor.
I bet Archie, I'm sure Archie like gave them lessons. I'm sure he taught them, he taught them to play quarterback. I'm sure he taught them how to do media and everything like that. They are very funny. They have very good comedic timing. They have just a very likable personality, even despite being like, obviously, I mean, we got some big time hatred for Peyton as a player, but man, he's just really funny. And he specifically mentioned NFL or SNL skits. One of the great SNL skits of all time, where Peyton Manning is playing with the kids, playing football with the kids, and hitting in the backs with footballs, and you know, cussing them out, having them go sit in the porta potty because they didn't catch the ball. It's fantastic. Worst. This is a deep cut. This is going back to like when I was watching ESPN in 2010. I was talking about Trent Dilfer's segments that he was doing, running on commercial in between Trent Dilfer uttering preposterous takes about Phillip Rivers and how tough he is. Were these weight loss ads for some
Nutrisystem?
Yeah, Nutrisystem.
It's I'll never forget them.
Sure, Nutrisystem. So this would, the worst for me is going to be, it's going to be Mike Golic and Dan Marino, who are both plugging Nutrisystem in just the worst way possible, just a way that made me never ever want to sample that product. Mike Golic, I believe it's weird the things that stick with you, Taylor, after all these years, but I can pretty much tell you verbatim, Mike Golic's commercial included a line where he said, "My wife doesn't find me as disgusting as she used to," or something like that, which, okay, fair enough, but like, way to plug your product, bro. So
also, she probably still finds him disgusting, just not disgusting.
Slightly less disgusting. So, and I love Dan Marino as a quarterback. He was terrible in those commercials. So those are going to be my bests and my worsts. You have the floor.
So first of all, anyone who's been watching NFL games this year has enjoyed and loved the Baker Mayfield in Browns Stadium commercials that State Farm's been doing. Absolutely some of the best. I feel like the concept of a player and creating the stadium as their home, it was just the moment someone thought of that, they're like, oh, this is going to kill. And really, I think Baker does a fantastic job. I think he's very jovial and goes along with all the bits and stuff. And I think his timing's really good there. And then my second best actor is going to be Antonio Brown in his YouTube videos for the viral videos. Dude, this guy, when he finds out he was released, and he's, I'm free as a bird, fly free. And he was so viral, and obviously the camera gravitated towards him, and I just love him for it. So then for worst, I've got Aaron Rodgers in the State Farm commercials. I think he's very wooden and very, I like Rodgers. I like him as a quarterback a lot. But I think that he can't act. And I think
he's
that's
also
pretty
not a super likable person. Like, I mean,
that's correct.
I admire him as a competitor.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
He's a competitive prick, but he's just, he's just not, you know, Pat is a competitive prick, but in a likable way, and you
super likable.
The Mannings as well. Yep. Rogers is a competitive prick in like the Tom Brady
way. Yep.
Yes. Yep.
Michael Jordan. Yep. For sure. Yep. I mean, that some guys, all they care about is winning, and they'll burn every bridge to get there. And Rogers does seem
not like the guys that you want to sell your product.
No, not at all. And then for the worst, I have Antonio Brown in his YouTube videos, because as as up as he was when he was released, this video that he recorded and released for some reason, when John Gruden calls him to figure out what the hell is going on, man. And they sit there and they talk about how you're the most misunderstood fucking human being I've ever met in my life, when John Gruden's lighting him up and he's, oh, this is just welcome to my life, man. AB is just very unlikable and terrible. And, oh, I'm just, oh, they just don't understand me. And this is, he's so frustrating in that.
I've been trying to be a Raider from day one.
Yeah, right. You've been trying to be a Raider. You screamed that you were free like a bird when they released you. You've been trying to be a Raider.
Come on.
You hated it there. So AB gets my nod for both best and worst in, because he's, I was so enthralled by the AB saga that last year. It was captivating. That dude is berserk.
He is literally berserk. He's something else. Well, Taylor, that's going to do it for the mailbag questions this week. As always, you guys can add us on Twitter. You can DM us. You can also join our Discord server, hang out with our fellow listeners and birds of war. And drop us questions there, I believe. Well, we got one on Twitter from Chiefs Cody, and then we also got one on our Discord server from Corey.
Yeah, so a lot of guys are dropping recent questions there. I think it's easier for us to respond and to, you know, keep track of and stuff like that. We are now up to, let's see, 54 members of the Discord server. So we're doing pretty good.
That's awesome. Come join the club. It's a lot of cool people that we hang out with on Twitter too, but it's just kind of a fun and different way. And plus it's not public. So, you know, like if you're worried about saying anything that whatever your boss is going to give you crap for, come to the Discord server, hang out there. And, you know, it's like the parlor of Chiefs Twitter, right? Like,
don't
it's
do
like,
that.
You know, it's a free speech zone. Well, it's uncensored. It's free. That brings us, Taylor, to our preview for this week, which we don't have to spend a whole lot of time with. This is an NFC matchup, but it's going to be a fun one to recap here in a couple of days. The Chiefs are traveling to Tampa Bay, or should I say Tampa Bay, to play the Buccaneers. And they are coming off a loss on Monday Night Football to the Rams, in which Tom Brady again forgot to shake hands with the opposing quarterback who defeated him, Jared Goff.
Doesn't know him well enough, I think is what I heard him say.
Ridiculous. It's Tom ridiculous. Brady. He said after he didn't shake hands with Nick Foles that it didn't occur to him. It didn't cross his mind. Guy's 43, so unless he has dementia, which I guess is
well,
possible.
He forgot the down earlier in
yeah,
the year. So.
Yeah, I guess that's possible. That's going to be our new take, is maybe Tom has early onset dementia. I mean, he's old. That's an age joke. It works on a lot of levels, but yeah, we were just talking about the competitive pricks that are unlikable. And that is, in fact, where we find Tom Brady. But he also is old. And in fact, Taylor, he's bad. He's bad. I know 2 weeks ago, PFF was telling us that he, in fact, has graded higher than Patrick Mahomes, and that they are essentially have been playing on the same level this year. But I just want to throw a stat at you that I saw today.
Okay.
Tom Brady's passer rating on deep passes, which I believe is over 20 yards, for the past month, hold on, let me just check my notes here. It's zero. It's 0.00.
Oh,
which,
no.
As a reminder, Taylor, the way quarterback rating works, it's an esoteric formula, but the way that it works is that if you just take the snap and then throw the ball into the ground, that's like a 39.5, I believe, is your incomplete, all incomplete passes if you
That's
never
correct.
Complete a pass. So to get to zero, you have to not complete passes, but then you also have to complete passes but to the other team for interceptions. That's how you get to zero. So Tom Brady he's completed more passes to the other team on these deep passes the last month of the season.
You want to hear what those numbers are? This
yeah,
is great.
I do want
so,
to hear.
Per Next Gen Stats, in against the Rams last night, Tom Brady was 0-for-6 with 2 picks on deep passes. Whew. And over his last 4 games, he is 0-for-19 on deep shots with 3 interceptions.
Is that good?
Is that horrifying? He has completed 3 passes to the other team and no passes to his own team when he throws the ball deep.
Yikes, that's not great.
He's got Godwin and Evans and Gronk and AB.
Yeah, and Slotty Miller.
And Slotty Miller.
The forgotten man. Yeah, I mean, the talking point here is, you know, they obviously, the offensive playmakers on this team are really scary. And frankly, their offensive line is also very good. But like, does any of that matter if Tom Brady can't throw the ball more than 20 yards down the field? Because, listen, we kind of glossed over this recapping the Raiders game. If there's one thing that we've been very bad at lately, it's open field tackling. And so, you know, could Tom Brady theoretically do something similar to what Derek Carr just did, which was, you know, check the ball down, you know, find guys that are open 5 to 7 yards down the field and then just let them pick up yak and make guys miss? Yeah, I mean, I think that's theoretically possible. Defense is going to have to play better, but I literally can't picture in my mind what it would look like for the Chiefs to get burned deep in this game, because Tom Brady just cannot throw the ball deep anymore.
No, he can't do it.
He literally can't do it.
He can't. And the other thing that the Chiefs have been pretty bad at is those deep balls, especially against the Raiders in the game that they almost lost and the game they did lose. They got burned in Arrowhead. And even this game, like, Aguilar was open And Carr did hit a couple deep balls, especially on their first drive. You know, they, if Brady can't throw that ball, that just takes away a huge element of what the Chiefs have to try and defend against. And they can play bump and they can, you know, get up in their face. And really, Brady is also, not only can he not throw the ball deep, he has the worst passer rating on pressures in the NFL. Against the Rams, again, he was like, oh, for the world with, you know, anytime the Rams had anybody in his face. And it's more of the same. If the Chiefs can sell out a little bit, and if they can send some guys that they, and Spags loves to blitz, everybody knows that. And if they can blitz him a little bit and not have to worry about the back end, because they know that he's struggling on those deep ones, man, Tampa could have a bad, bad game against the Chiefs. The Chiefs can already beat Tom Brady when he was with Bill Belichick and at the height of his powers and all that stuff. The Chiefs still played with him every single time. So now that he's possibly over the hill, I don't know. It'll be very interesting to see this matchup.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned the Patriots, because the last time the Chiefs saw Tom Brady was in New England. He was not good in that game.
No. And
the talent level, I mean, the reason he flew south for the winters to come you know, to the retirement home in Tampa, you know, it's pretty obvious, the playmakers, and then bringing in AB a couple of weeks ago and getting him integrated into the offense. You know, I mean, obviously the supporting cast is radically better than what he had in New England last year when the Chiefs played him the last time. But the Chiefs played him well in that game. And Steve Spagnuolo traditionally has played Brady very well. He obviously famously beat the 18-0 Patriots in the Super Bowl when he was defensive coordinator for the Giants and held them to 14 points. And, you know, I was concerned by the performance against the Raiders, because I think on a surface level, some of the things that the Raiders can do well, I think the Bucs can also do well. You know, like Tom Brady distributing short passes to his, you know, elusive little, you know, scrappy, you know, they basically have like three slot receivers, Scotty Miller and AB and Godwin are all kind of, you know, slot guys. And then they got Evans, who's kind of their bigger guy, and Gronk too. But I don't know. I think the Chiefs have the capability, they have the personnel to slow the Bucs down. And then the question becomes, can the Chiefs score against the Bucs defense, which has been pretty good. I mean, one of the better defenses in the NFL, probably a top 10 defense.
Let me make that question easy for you. Can the Chiefs score on blank? The answer is yes.
Yes. Yes, they can. So if the Chiefs can score, as long as they can prevent the Bucs from scoring, you're saying that maybe we'll win this game?
I think that's the Chiefs' formula for defeating any opponent. If they can slow the opponent down, they're not going to have to worry about their offense. They're just not. They are the most pencil them in for 30 points a game offense that I've ever seen. And it becomes more apparent, you know, whenever the Chiefs are either off or playing a primetime game, and we can sit there and watch all the NFL games unfold on noon, and you look at all these halftime scores and they're 7-3 and 10-6 and stuff, and you just think like, man, like this is just, the NFL is just different when it's not the Chiefs. Like, it is hard to score in the NFL unless you're the Chiefs. And when you're the Chiefs, they just pile them up every week. This is just another, they've now scored 23 points or more in 46 out of 47 games, or 47 out of 48, whatever it is now. And they're remarkable in their consistency. And I just am not worried about the Chiefs scoring. I mean, bring on the Steelers, bring on any, whatever defense you want. And I have a pretty good feeling that the Chiefs are going to get it done.
It's going to be a fun one. We look forward to recapping that for you all next week. Have a great Thanksgiving, everybody. We appreciate you listening, and it's always sunny in Chiefs Kingdom.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.